And
so we're jumped to 107, and our special guest, Kyle Markley, is that correct?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Kyle. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, happy to be here.
You are running as a libertarian for the Secretary of State of Oregon, and one of your hallmark issues is opposition to 107.
Yes.
Which is the campaign finance
reform
bill.
And Kyle, if I can just give a little bit of background to our listeners, what caught our eye when we were going through the voters pamphlet was Kyle doesn't just oppose it. Kyle is passionate about this. Right. Kyle has filed 14 different oppositions that are in the voters pamphlet against this measure. And very rarely does an individual ever write one letter in opposition, but when there are 14, you know you got somebody who has a real eye and a real passion on a particular target. Because explain to us the details of how you get an opposition into the voters pamphlet, Kyle.
Sure, I can do that. It's actually not a difficult process at all. There's an online system run by the Secretary of State called Orastar, and you use that system to submit statements. And it's just a web-based tool. You can write your argument in there and submit it, and then you'll need to spend the filing fee to pay for it to have it put in.
And what is the filing fee?
It's $1,200 per statement.
Okay.
So that is a real barrier for lots of people to submit those letters, because $1,000 is a lot of money to make a statement, and you made it 14 times.
Yeah, it sure is a lot of money. And it, you know, it might look funny that I have so many statements in there, and I'm not an organization that has a lot of funding. But this has been an issue that I've been passionate about for several years. And I saw this coming. I was on a government task force on campaign finance reform a few years ago, and at the time they were recommending amendments like this to enable contribution limits and things like that. And I was, of course, opposed to it then, and I've continued to be opposed. But I've been watching this go through for several years now, and I've tried to combat some earlier attempts at ballot measures also. And when I saw the legislature decide to refer this, and that happened last year, by the way, then I knew it was coming, and I had more than a year to prepare.
So, just to play a little bit of the devil's advocate, aren't you being a little premature in opposition? Because the measure itself does not pass any actual legislation to restrict funding. All it does is amends the Constitution to allow restrictions of to allow a campaign reform law to be passed. In and of itself, does nothing to change the actual campaign finance laws at all. Right? It just provides the opportunity for it to happen. So
that's true. Yeah.
Okay. So I just wanted to make sure that I had the understanding correct. So
yeah,
is
you got it right. This won't set any limits by itself.
Yeah, so really, aren't you like jumping the gun a little? I mean, shouldn't you wait to see if any... I mean, I agree that obviously the legislator passed this in preparation for, you know, to move forward on some kind of bill. Do you know if there's any legislators or anyone out there that has actually drafted such a bill? And that's why you're so concerned, or are you kind of jumping the gun and saying, well, I know it's coming and it's going to be bad?
It's the latter. I know it's coming. And as a principled libertarian, I'm very passionate about freedom of speech, and I do want my state constitution to guarantee freedom of speech in politics. I know that if our constitution is modified, then there definitely will be limits, and I don't think that there should be limits at all. don't care very much what the particular bill is that's going to come out of the legislature. I know I won't like it, and I think the best place to stop it is out here, get out in front of it, and try to stop it as soon as I can.
Well, I just find it always interesting. We had, Brady and I had this conversation last night about this idea that money equates to free speech. And I know from a libertarian perspective that that is a value that you hold. I do not hold that same value. I do not consider speech and money to be the same thing. And I've personally feel that money has ruined our political process. And, you know, it wasn't until I was really taking a strong look at all the opposition that I began to really understand what it is you are against, and that you do absolutely equate speech and money. Can you tell me how you arrived at that philosophy?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be very happy to. So there are some kinds of speech that you can do that don't cost any money, right? You can talk to your neighbors, you can talk to people around you, and it costs you nothing. But the number of people that you can reach like that is tiny. If you want to reach a bigger audience, then you have to do things that do cost money, right? If you'd like to go print up some handbills and hand them out, well, now you have to pay for paper and ink. If you want to send letters, you've got to spend money on postage. If you want to put an ad on the radio or the television, you have to pay for that. The ability to reach more people is the thing that money is going to get for you. When you're giving money to a political organization, they're spending that money on that political expression. And if they didn't have the money, then they wouldn't be able to reach very many people, and maybe they might not be able to make that political message at all. So when I look at trying to limit money, the consequence of that, and really the intended consequence of that, is to limit the political speech. So, of course, they go hand in hand.
But to give unlimited power to the person with the biggest pocketbook, to me, is skewing the power balance that for instance, third-party libertarian, because you don't have the deep pockets that both the Republicans and the Democrats do, we don't get to hear from the Libertarian Party or the Green Party or the Progressive Party or the Independent Party. I want to hear from those people, but I don't get to because they don't have the deep pockets and the funding that the two major parties do. And I think, to me, that has lessened the democracy, the process that we have about hearing from all sides and all views, because we can't. If you're not buying television time, if you're not buying billboards, then you're not going to be heard. And I just think it's so interesting because you come from a party that is under that you get the short end of the stick because of this, and yet you still support it. And I just think it's fascinating, because I would say that if I were to take a straw poll today in Columbia County, I would think that most of the people would say, absolutely, we need controls about the amount of money spent in elections. So to me, you're kind of like, you're really fighting, you're David and Goliath, and yet you're passionate, and that is what attracts both Brady and I to your argument, is the fact that one single individual has taken it upon himself to mount such a campaign against what I consider to be a losing battle.
Well, especially when you are being opposed by both the Democrat and Republican Party, which is surprising that they in themselves want to limit their own, as you would call it, free speech, which is sort of an interesting position for them both to take, because there's not very many things that Democrats and Republicans agree on, but yet they are in agreement of support for this legislation, and you're like one of the only voices out there that's opposing it.
Yeah, well, this is not an obvious thing, but let me give you a bit of inside perspective from a minor party perspective. My political party, the Libertarian Party of Oregon, which I've been very active in for a long time, we actually rely on a small number of large donors to fund our operations. Our major expense is the primary election that we conduct privately. You know, it's paid for by our donors. And it costs on the order of $20,000 every 2 years to do that. But if these limits come into effect, I don't think we'll be able to afford that anymore, because we don't have a large number of donors, and it isn't possible for us to raise that money in small increments of the sort that, that people want to leave legal. We actually rely on these, you know, donations from, I would call them angel investors, except they're not really getting a return out of it, in order to do our work. So the big organizations, you know, the enormous PACs, the huge political parties, they have a big reach already. They will still be able to raise money in an environment where there are contribution limits. It's the smaller organizations like mine that are really going to hurt from this. It's the political minorities that are going to get run out of the system. So it's really no surprise to me. Democrats and Republicans have an interest in keeping political minorities down.
Sure.
Right? They're talking about bipartisan support for contribution limits. Yeah, of course they are. They would like to build a moat to defend the existing power structure. Censorship always benefits the powerful and harms the powerless. Right? That's us. We need the money to speak truth to power. And right now, we're getting it from a few very generous people, and this threatens to cut off that funding source.
I do believe that I have heard floated for quite some time a policy that apparently goes on in other countries where the government actually funds elections, and everybody gets an equal amount of money, and they get to spend it however they choose. But the money actually comes from the government, and so therefore everybody's treated equally. And so every minor party would get the same amount of money to use for the same exposure that the major parties do. Would you be in favor of that kind of a system?
I would not, and there are two reasons. I have a practical reason and I have a principled reason. The practical reason is that, of course, I don't think it would ever be equal. There would be barriers to try to differentiate between who is a serious candidate who actually has a chance, because we don't want to waste public money on the other five candidates who really don't have a chance anyway. So they set the barriers such that the major party candidates would qualify and the minor party candidates would not. That's almost guaranteed. But the principal reason is, of course, going back to freedom of speech, I'm a libertarian, and I don't want to force people to subsidize my political message, nor do I want to be forced to subsidize anybody else's political message. Whether I agree with them or not, I think it's wrong. Freedom of speech includes the freedom not to speak. If I don't want to talk about politics at all, I shouldn't be forced to by having my tax money go fund somebody's speech.
Interesting. Well,
and that idea is as old as Jefferson. I think it was the Virginia Statute on Religious Freedom. He said that to force a man to fund speech that he opposes is sinful and tyrannical.
Well, that's pure. I mean, you're talking purity in politics. That has never existed in this country, or I think in any other country. We just can't come up with a perfect system. And I think what we're trying to do is to come up with something that is more just than money.
Right.
I mean, we all individually have the ability to go out and stand on a street corner and wave a sign. That doesn't cost anybody anything, and you don't have to report that on our OrStar. You know, this is pure politics. This is grassroots politics. This is politics at its basic level, is one human trying to connect with passing cars that go by on the highway. I wish that what you were saying was possible, because I do, frankly, believe that you're right. I just don't think it works. Money is, in this country, is so powerful.
Well, and it depends on how the money is. Like, to me, I think part of the roots of where this legislation came from, frankly, was the Phil Knight campaign for Newt Mueller.
Yes.
And I think that most Oregonians feel the, I think it was $2.5 million that he gave his campaign, feel that that was an affront to our democracy, that there was something unseemly about that contribution from one individual, and don't like it.
That's true.
And I think that's where most Oregonians feel. I mean, that was before I started reading some of your argument. I was a definite yes on 107. I'm now a little bit more gray on it, but I still feel that what Phil Knight did is wrong, and that there should be a way to stop what he did, because I don't think that it just seems unseemly. It seems
dirty.
An abuse. It seems dirty, that kind of politics.
Kyle, we need to take a break. Can you stay with us for a few more minutes?
Sure.
Awesome.
We'll be right back.
Help the Arbor Day Foundation plant more trees across the nation. Plant a tree today for all the world to share. You can make the air taste fresher, breathe as deeply as you please. You create a world of pleasure just by simply planting trees. Adding shade, creating beauty is just part of what they're worth. You make the world a better place with trees, protecting the good earth. Help the Arbor Day Foundation plant more trees across the and a tree today for all the world to share. And a tree today for all the world to share.
This is Crystal Gale. Plant trees. For more information, go to arborday.org. You'll make a world of difference.
Sometimes the smart choice is right in front of you. When you choose Portland Community College, you know you'll get a great education that won't put you in debt for life. It's just smart. Apply at pcc.edu. Hashtag ThinkPCC first.
Sometimes the best idea is right in front of you. When you choose Portland Community College, you choose faculty who are all about you. Expect to be noticed. Apply at pcc.edu. Hashtag ThinkPCC first.
This is Wayne Mayo. Meals on Wheels has been providing shut-ins with hot meals since 1976. Now they need our help more than ever. Become a virtual driver. Write a check for $15 to St. Helens Senior Center and send it to 375 South 15th, St. Helens, 97051. Mark it for home delivery. Plan on writing a check every month. That's $15 a month payable to the St. Helens Senior Center, 375 South 15th, St. Helens, 97051. Thanks in advance for your help.
It's cleancolumbiacounty.info. Call the show now at 503-397-1600 or toll free 877-397-1632. Now, here's Nancy Ward and Brady Preheim.
From the COVID-free bunker here at Kohai, Nancy and Brady, and a great guest, Kyle, is here today, too.
Yes.
Kyle Markley, our candidate for Secretary of State for the Libertarian Party, and also the one and only and huge
Not the only, because there was one other.
Oh, there was one other, in opposition to 107.
But I do want to follow up with the question I asked you right before the break about the Phil Knight contribution and how you feel about that. And I think the feeling that most Oregonians feel that was some kind of a perversion of our political process.
Okay. Yeah. When I look at that, clearly I do have a different reaction than most people do. I look at it and I say, Phil Knight failed to elect Newt Mueller. It didn't work. That actually goes over as evidence in my column that money isn't nearly as powerful as people think it is. Because, you know, money doesn't fill out a ballot for anyone. What the money does is it funds political expression, which tries to persuade voters to vote for or against somebody. But the persuasion has to be effective. They have to do a good job. It's very easy to waste money in political speech, and then that money is just wasted. If a candidate is not a good candidate, it doesn't matter how much money is behind them, they're not going to win. And for proof of that, we only have to look back a couple of months. Michael Bloomberg, in the Democratic primary, spent $1 billion with a B. That was almost as much money as the entire rest of the field combined, and he got little for it, right? He lost to Joe Biden, who was actually number 5 in spending, not number 2. And Joe Biden won several states having hardly done any campaigning or any spending in them at all. There are clearly factors that are a whole lot more important than money. If $1 billion and spending 10 times as much as Joe Biden can't make you win against Joe Biden, then who cares about the money? It doesn't actually work. I'm not afraid of it.
I think your point is well taken in some aspects, but I think part of it is the unattractiveness of the candidate. I think the concern that we have in, like, the Newt Bueller is, I don't think Newt Bueller was a particularly attractive candidate either. Michael Bloomberg wasn't a particularly attractive candidate. But if someone like, Pete Buttigieg had $1 billion, then that might have made a difference for him. Or someone like, you know, Kristen Gillibrand, or, you know, one of those other candidates, or, frankly, even Elizabeth Warren. Maybe then in that case the money would have made, I mean, so yes, it can't ever overcome all evils, but it can certainly level the playing field. And there's an expression about putting lipstick on a pig, but if you have two pigs running, the lipstick helps.
That's a good one, Mr. Freeheim.
And I agree, right? The lipstick does help, and having the money enables you to get your message out to more people. And that extra increment of money might be the thing that can persuade people to support you. So I'm not saying that money isn't important. Obviously it is. I actually think that money and freedom of speech is so important that I want to keep government's hands out of the job. I don't want it to limit anyone. Because what's going to happen is that the government would come in and tell people like Phil Knight, that you have spoken enough and we don't want to hear from you anymore. And I think that's profoundly wrong, because speech violates no one's rights. It harms no one in any way at all. And, you know, you've got a rich person here in Phil Knight, and he's earned his money, and I believe that he should be able to spend it on the things that he wants to spend it on. And if he wants to have a giant house, he should be able to have a giant house. If he wants to spend it on political speech, he should be able to spend it on political speech. If he wants a yacht, he should be able to buy a yacht. Whatever. It's his, right? What he does with his money doesn't violate my rights. So I don't have a right to tell him, no, you can't do that.
But when you use the example of his house and his yacht, that doesn't affect me directly. But when he uses it in the political arena, it does directly affect me. And also, I would like to bring up the difference between running for president or even running for governor, where most of the citizens are aware of the candidates. But when you get down to the local level, I mean, we live in a rural community and we fully understand that many of the people who will fill out their ballots do not know anything about the candidates except the ads that they see, the billboards, mm-hmm. the ads on the radio, the ads in the newspaper. That's what they're basing their decision on. To me, that's skewing. That means that if you don't have the money, your message is not going to be heard.
Well, in Oregon, having the voter's pamphlet, I think, is a wonderful tool for voters. Candidates can put their statement in there, and you have something to read, not just a soundbite you've heard somewhere on the radio or on a TV ad. I think that is the most important communication that any candidate can put out, because it lets you learn something about what the candidate really believes, provided they've written the statement that's at all useful.
And it's highly read, actually. I was surprised, but like I think the numbers I saw in our last election cycle was like over 80% of voters say they at least glance over the voter's guide prior to voting, which surprised me. I was very surprised that it was that high of a percentage.
Yeah. It's my primary tool. And things are only getting better in this respect. It's becoming easier and easier for candidates to have websites, for example, that can tell you more about them. And it's easier for candidates to reach out to people on new kinds of advertising, like online, social media kinds of things. It has really, I think, democratized political speech. It used to be impossible to get a large message out to a lot of people unless you had a huge organization or you were an extremely wealthy person. But look what I can do this year, right? Just on my own as an individual, I put a bunch of stuff in the voter's pamphlet, I have a website, I have some online advertising that you may or may not have seen, and I'm able to reach a lot of people as an individual. I think, you know, far from being able to saturate everything and drown out the little voices, the little voices have more impact now than they've ever had before, and that, frankly, is something that excites me.
So has there been much, I haven't seen any ads for 107, frankly, on either side except what I've seen in the voter's guide. Do you know if the pro on 107 people, have they been spending money on television or ads? Because I haven't heard any or seen any.
I do not know. I actually have neglected to watch their campaign finance filings, and I know that they have staff and they have a website and they're spending on those things, but I don't know what else they're doing.
So if this passes, which I think there's a great likelihood that it will.
Do you agree with that?
I do. Yeah, I think it's likely to pass. Unfortunate, but true.
What do you see is going to happen next? Because there certainly is a possibility that a grassroots campaign could be launched to come up with a bill. But I think probably the more reasonable likelihood is that it will come from the legislature. And what is it that you fear is going to happen when it is put in? What would it be, the Rules Committee? Would they be the ones who would take this over?
It would probably go to the Rules Committee, but recently there was a Senate Committee on Campaign Finance, and if that still exists, it may go there instead. I'm not sure.
Okay. And how do you feel about that?
So I think you're right about the trajectory. I think the legislature is eager to take this.
Right.
And they would. And then you will have all kinds of clash from various groups who want to make sure that they can get some advantage out of whatever the law is.
Yes.
That would come down.
Yep.
And then you're going to see politics at its worst. You will see politicians trying to build that moat to protect their interests and to fight everybody else's interests, and it's going to be extremely ugly.
Yeah, which is just what we need, isn't it? Just more ugliness and divisiveness.
This is one of the problems with Measure 107. It does not have any requirement of any kind for fairness in the ultimate laws that come out.
Right.
To pass a completely unfair law.
Does Measure 107 also allow the length of time? Because I think that's one of the things that many European countries limit, is that by law you're limited to 30 or 60 days of campaigning. And I didn't see any language in it, but not certain if it would allow that kind of campaign finance to say you can spend what you want, but you only have a period of time to do it.
That's an interesting question, and I suspect at first blush that it would not let you set time limits on when campaigning can happen, but it's possible it could. The reason it's difficult to figure that out is because of the interplay between the First Amendment and the Oregon Constitution. You can't limit someone's direct political speech because of the First Amendment. That's been true since the 1970s. So I think then you would not be able to limit someone talking about elections, you know, in or out of election season. But could they do it to candidate committees? Well, I don't know. That's something that would really take some study.
Do you plan to mount a campaign if this does get taken over by the legislature? And if so, what would that look like?
It would probably look like me going to testify at every opportunity. But that might not work very well. You know, when the Senate Committee on Campaign Finance held their hearings about this a few years ago, or maybe it was just last year now, I think it was just last year, I told them that I wanted to come and speak against it, and I asked to be invited, and they did not invite me. I finally went on my own to try to talk during the public comment period, and they had several invited guests who naturally were all in favor of it, and they let them talk as long as they wanted. So by the time it came around to me, they were only going to give me 4 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And it would probably go something like that again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trust me, I've been there, know how that feels.
Yeah, we all do. Everyone in this room knows how that feels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, yeah, I think this is going to require a lot of participation by people who care about how this actually gets implemented. And that is the part that concerns me the most, because it's really this measure kind of just like opens up a Pandora's box and doesn't have any bumper guards around it. I mean, we don't know where this could go. It's like mm-hmm. the sky's the limit and it's the wild, wild west and we can come up with anything we want. And again, the concern is it the people with the most money that will influence the legislators on how they write this bill?
Yeah, as you said, it's like putting the fox in charge of the hen house.
Right, right.
Yeah, which is a concern.
It's a blank check.
I'm sorry, say again?
It's a blank check.
Yeah.
It's unlimited government power to censor political speech. Good luck.
I do have a question, though, philosophically. Do you have a difference in opinion about someone like Phil Knight, an individual spending a couple million dollars, versus an organization like a union like AFSCME or one of them spending a couple million dollars, where they represent, you know, that couple million dollars comes from, you know, it was the question, and I think I read it in the voters pamphlet. It's the question of, is there a difference between one man with $1 million or a million people with a dollar? And in your opinion, is there a difference between those people's ability to speak? Or does it make no difference to you?
I think that there should be no difference. Every person should have the freedom to speak as much or as little as they want about political issues. Full stop.
Interesting.
So I'd like to, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I'd like to get into the actual philosophy behind the Libertarian Party. If you were to give us your elevator speech, tell us what it says.
Well, the easiest elevator speech, I suppose, is to say that libertarians care about your individual rights, and we want to preserve and protect all of your rights all of the time. Freedom of speech, of course, is just one of many, but it's a key one because it's the one that can help safeguard all the others. We believe that people should be able to do as they want to do. They should enjoy liberty and freedom so long as they're not injuring somebody else, so long as they're not violating anybody else's rights. It's very true that this may let some people make the wrong decisions, do things that we may disagree with, but I have to err on the side of freedom and say, yes, people ought to enjoy the liberty to do things that we think are wrong or stupid, because we also want to do things that other people may consider wrong or stupid. I've had a lot of people tell me that I'm wrong and stupid about Measure 107, but I want to be able to talk about it anyway, and I just want that reciprocality in freedom. Let me do what I want to do. I'll let you do what you want to do. Everybody can engage in voluntary cooperation with others. I don't think we need to have anybody forcing anybody to do things.
And that usually includes, you know, the big one that's for libertarians that I hear about is drugs. And most libertarians believe that all drugs should be legalized. Do you agree with that?
I do.
Yeah. And see, and I'm there with you.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, it's like, you know, which I'm saying, that's where I have my libertarian. It's like, it's, you know, we've had a war on drugs for, what, 50 years? And
30
yeah,
years.
And it's like, clearly it hasn't worked. Clearly it doesn't work. And it's like, yeah, I would legalize it all, tax it. I'd put a tax on it and use the tax for treatment for those people that want it.
Well, and that's a, I would love to know your thoughts on that, Kyle. Would you agree with Brady's idea?
I think that is the compassionate approach, yes. We don't need to be putting people in prison for this, for what's really a medical issue, right? If they have an addiction, if they have a real problem, then what they need is help, not prison. Because when you put them in prison, then they have a prison record, and they may be a felon. They may lose their rights. They'll be separated from their families, from their loved ones. They'll lose their job. They become a burden on society instead of someone who can contribute to society. Putting people in prison for drug problems is utterly the wrong approach. Yes, we should be looking to give people help that need help, and there are going to be some people who take things too far, right? And I know some people like this, and it's a tragedy, but it's a far smaller tragedy than throwing a whole bunch of people, you know, into the criminal justice system and seeing what comes out of those gears after they mash them up. It's just wrong.
Well, I'm really happy to hear you say that, because my view of libertarians is, you know, do anything you want, but don't ever ask me to spend a penny on helping you. So that's not what I'm hearing from you. I'm hearing you say that if people need treatment, that we need to provide that for them. Is that correct?
Well, briefly, yes. But it does turn into the issue of who is going to be providing for treatment.
Yes, of
course.
In
this country, historically, we used to have a very large number of fraternal organizations, and we had stronger charities, and people helped each other voluntarily. And as the government has grown and there have been more and more of these social safety net programs, it has actually eroded some of this private sector help that was available for people. And I think that's a tragedy. I think charity is much better given voluntarily, and I believe that people do, in fact, give a lot voluntarily, and they're less likely to do that when the government taxes them more. And
that's
when the government taxes them more, they're going to take a cut, and they're going to spend it on their stuff, and that's how we have, for example, an enormous military budget, when if people just had their tax money, they might actually be giving more to sort of social welfare organizations and have more for themselves, and then maybe we wouldn't be spending so much on military issues, just as an example.
Interesting.
What do you think of the idea of people being able to opt out of paying taxes, like to support our military?
It's a difficult thing. The military specifically is a difficult one, because that is a case where everybody is getting a benefit and free riding is kind of a problem.
Some of us don't consider everything they do in the military to be of benefit to this country.
Yes. Yes, some of it's actively harmful.
Yes,
I agree.
Yes.
So quickly, we're almost out of time. I wanted to ask you about 110, reducing addiction penalties and allowing for treatment. I would assume then from what you were saying that you would be supportive of 110.
I likely am, but I'm going to point out that unfortunately I haven't had the time to read it yet.
Yeah.
So I support it, but since I haven't actually read it, I can't say for sure that I'm going to support it. I've heard things that, you know, there might be some things in it that I wouldn't like it. So it's probably on the whole a good thing, but I'm just not certain about the details.
And what about 109, the psilocybins?
I support that.
Okay. And 108, the cigarette tax, which is probably the most interesting one from your philosophy of whether you would support 108.
Yeah, that's an easy one. I don't support that. Mm-hmm. We don't need to raise, you know, taxes. We don't need sin taxes at all, basically, and this is making it even worse.
Yeah, see, so that's where I sort of diverge from the libertarian viewpoint, is because I don't mind taxing those sins. To use it, let people do it, but tax it and use that tax money to help people. Because that's
I look at the demographic.
Pardon?
I look at the demographic of smokers as people who are basically politically powerless. We keep raising taxes on cigarettes over and over again, and the demographic itself skews toward the poorer end of the spectrum. So here we are, taking money from poor people because of the choices that they're making. And that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, but they could stop smoking.
It's very difficult to stop smoking. Nicotine is incredibly addictive.
Yeah, that's why we're going to tax it, so you have money to pay for it.
By taking it away from them?
Yeah, exactly. We're gonna make you help yourself.
Well,
yeah, and take a cut while you're at it.
But the other side of that, Kyle, is that people who smoke too much and take too many drugs and drink too much tend to need more medical services. Their body tends to have repercussions when you engage in these sins. And that has to be paid for, too. I mean, it's inhumane not to provide the service. Yes, it may have been self-inflicted, but if you get lung cancer, are you really going to withhold treatment because you got it because you smoked?
Yeah.
So, Brady would do that, but most
Sorry.
Of us would not. So how do you balance those things?
Gosh, medical funding. I didn't realize that would be a topic we're going into. That's pretty big.
It is. It's huge.
I don't know where to start on that one.
Yeah. And we only have 4 minutes. So just briefly, are you in favor of universal health care?
No, I'm not.
So you think we all need to be out there fighting and paying for the best health care that we can afford?
Well, I'm in favor of the model of insurance. Right. Maybe not the kind of insurance we have now. I think that the fact that it's mostly provided by and through employers is a weird historical artifact of the tax law that's actually pretty interesting in itself. But insurance is the right model for spreading risk. It works in all other fields. So that's what people ought to do. Insurance is the right way through. And it encourages people to take care of themselves, because if they don't, then their premiums may go up. And it encourages people to shop around. It encourages people to be sensitive to price, which right now in a lot of healthcare you aren't, because you never know what anything costs until you get the bill weeks later.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's a problem, right? Without price transparency, you don't know what you're getting. You can't have any trade-offs, and it's difficult to weigh alternatives. And that's in large part how we have this out-of-control spending.
Well, you couldn't even find out. I mean, go to your doctor and say he wants to do this, and say how much does that cost? They have no idea.
Yeah.
Oh no, the provider has no idea.
No clue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Kyle, in the 2 minutes we have left, the one thing we haven't really touched on is your candidacy for Secretary of State. What made you want to run for this office?
I actually wanted to run for this office specifically to gain a platform to oppose Measure 107,
Okay.
And I thought that it was a coincidence that all of the other candidates for Secretary of State expressed support for Measure 107. Mm-hmm. But I have been a candidate for my local legislative district four times already in the past, and I probably would have done that again this year, except that I had a ballot measure to fight against.
Mm.
And I saw a couple of years ago that when Patrick Starnes was running for governor, he was running single issue on campaign finance reform. And that gave me the idea, you know, if one man can do it, another can too.
Sure.
I'll do the very same thing, only I'm going to oppose it. And that sounded like a fun thing, and it would get me a candidate statement that is statewide and widely read, mm-hmm. that I could use to point to my arguments against Measure 107.
Interesting.
I don't have any illusion that a third-party candidate can win the Secretary of State race, but I can use it to talk about the issues that I'm most passionate about.
Yes,
makes
absolutely.
Sense to me.
It does make sense. And how does this fit in with your day-to-day job at Intel? Do you get much flack from your coworkers?
Actually, no.
Good.
Politics very rarely comes up at the office.
Okay, that's a good way to keep it, I suppose.
Yes.
Well, we can't thank you enough for joining us today.
Very interesting.
You are absolutely fascinating. I mean, you're very thoughtful, and you're so well, you understand your subject so well, and you have done a very good job in making two voters wonder if they might be changing their vote. Maybe three.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
And I'm ecstatic to have had that effect on you. Thank you.
Good. You're welcome. We'll stay in touch.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.